So before I start rambling on and on, it's going to look like this. I'd just like to find out where you guys are at, you know? Because this is kind of an interesting space. How many of you guys are hackers, programmers, people programmers? That's good. This is excellent. How many are not? How many are more sort of businessy, strategy? Excellent. Okay, mostly hackers. That's good. Hackers tend to be less, you know, or more susceptible to reason in many ways. Okay, so. I think this is built as a bit of an OpenXML thing, and I'll talk a bit about that, but I'll talk about OpenOffice too. I guess why it's important. Why OpenOffice is so important? Well, if you look at the price of software on a new PC today, you know, you wander around, you buy an HP or a Dell or something, this is pretty much how it breaks down here. So I guess you can buy Vista these days if you have spare change. But, you know, this is how it pretty much looks between Office and Windows. Of course, Firefox, you know, is competing against something that disappears somewhere here, right? So it's pretty good. And I understand IE7 is even quite good. I've not used it, but I understand many of the most egregious faults have been fixed. And so there's a massive cost wedge driving OpenOffice out into the enterprise, which is brilliant, which is wonderful, just what we need. And so that means that actually normal people are using it today. OpenOffice has some really quite high penetration numbers. I'll show you maybe in a minute. And of course, most of that, or a lot of that, unfortunately, is on Windows. But at least it gives you an easy way to, you know, migrate away from Windows once you've got your documents under your own control and so on and so on. And so, yeah, we have lots of users. And some, you know, pretty impressive big deployments, in, particularly in Europe. You know, the French government, you know, deploys it everywhere. Recently, I guess, PSA, Peugeot Citroën, was one of the, you know, the largest deployments of, I guess, Linux desktops in a commercial company that did it for purely commercial reasons. You know? I mean, governments do all sorts of things for all sorts of reasons, but companies, you know, they look at the bottom line, pretty much. So the question is, if you meet someone and their first experience of free software ever has been OpenOffice, what are you going to say to them, right? You know, how are you going to, you know, cover yourself in shame and, you know, apologize? Or, you know, you need to be fixing this, right? Because this is what people are seeing first, you know? And well, I'll show you some graphs in a minute, but yeah. You know, we want people to love the software and like it, and it's not as lovable as it could be at the moment. So, I need help, as you see. Yeah, this is just a random commercial example about the cost here. So, these numbers are all, essentially everyone is using it now. I was pleased talking to some lawyers recently, very interesting sort of guys. And they're like, oh yeah, we use OpenOffice for everything, redlining support, all our contracts are done in OpenOffice. Oh, good. I'm glad it's working so well for you. Now, this is encouraging. And they wanted a few features adding, and that's, you know, we can do that, that's easy. And we saved, I think, $1 million in the first year by dropping Microsoft Office licensing just about. We're not a huge company, as you see. And each year subsequently, we've won that. So actually, at the time, this paid for the OpenOffice team inside the company. So clearly, it's a business decision, it makes perfect sense. Now, my problem is that out there I have other people that talk about other alternatives and why should I work on OpenOffice. This is just one graph of two of my competitors. This is another graph with the realities of the world. Are you aware of Google Trends? Google Trends is an interesting piece of software. You can search, you know, see what people were searching for. This is OpenOffice versus KeyOffice, I guess the second implementation. And I think freedom is clearly best served by improving the thing people are actually using. Now, I have another problem in the OpenOffice world. And that is that a lot of people have spent a lot of time and a lot of hot air building up something that's really, really, really important. Perhaps the most important thing that's ever going to happen to you. And that, unfortunately, is not the valuable thing. They have built up this very transient, tactical thing instead of the really valuable thing. So, here is OpenOffice.org. It's however many millions of lines of code, depending on how you count. It's, you know, 200 at least man years of work. It's, you know, 20 years old in places, but there's a huge corpus of free software here. And then on the other side we have ODF, which is about 700 pages and about, at the outside, 5 man years of work. Now, my problem is that people wander around and they go, the really important thing is open document standards, it's absolutely critical. And people understand this really easily. Because people, it turns out, you know, these real people that aren't hackers like us, they produce data, right? They don't code. They don't care about code often, which is a shame. But they do produce lots and lots of documents, particularly politicians. Politicians, of course, are all going to become famous one day, you know? They are going to become the prime minister. This is their goal, or their the president, or whatever. And at this point, they're going to want to write their memoirs, you know, of their illustrious political career spanning 5 decades or whatever. And so they really care that they couldn't read their earliest stump speech anymore, because it's in some random format, right? Lotus Word Pro or whatever. So they understand this data problem, you know, posterity needs to be able to read, you know, at her leisure, all of your documents. The problem is that actually, while the data format is good and it's useful, have ODF, and, you know, it is a good thing. I'm not knocking the concept. The important thing is this guy, because if you took away ODF, you could still read and write all of these documents in an XML format that, you know, you had entire visibility into because you have the code that actually takes it and renders it and lays it out, and you'll be able to do so effectively forever. Because this is free software, it's just not going to go away. All of these sort of legacy, you know, benefits that it's supposed to give you are really here. So, you know, if on the other hand, you took OpenOffice away and you had only a 700-page specification that no one implemented, this would not be a valuable thing. In theory, you would have all the same benefits, and isn't it wonderful, and anyone can implement it, and so on. But in actual fact, you fool yourself if you think there are any other implementations that actually can, you know, can get close to here, and I think the deployment numbers bear that out that I just showed you. So, the valuable bit is here. And the disruptive technology is free software. It's not open standards. So I like to write open source, not open standards. I'm a free software person, right? But if you say free software, not open standards, it sounds lame. But if you say open source, not open standards, then, you know, it's kind of more. Yeah, well, you know, O's and S's and that sort of thing. So yeah, so I'd like to persuade you that really the valuable piece is here. This is not an entirely self-interested thing, I must point out, but I've been saying this for many years. Okay, so the second thing is, I guess this just ties into it. You know, there was actually not a very big change between, you know, what was StarOffice and what became OpenOffice, arguably. I guess it was a lot of tweakage of various things, but I would argue that the free software is incredibly more valuable than the proprietary software. Just that. Quick punchline. So why is interoperability so important? Well, so I was quite surprised doing the market share analysis here to try and look at what's going on. There's a wiki. Now OpenOffice has this nice shared wiki instead of this awful content collaboration management system. It's absolutely abysmal. It was provided for us by a managed service provider. But we now have a wiki, which we run. It's very simple and cheap. And there's some nice tables and numbers and explanations and so on. But we've had something like 80 million downloads from the main site and maybe another 8.5 million that we know of, that we've actually tracked. This is not Linux CDs and 5 copies to friends and all this other stuff. These are pretty hard numbers there. Of course, you know, other people go around estimating, you know, market share and where we're at and so on and so on. Microsoft estimate they at least they get to charge for each copy, right? So they can just count their bank balance, divide by $300 or whatever, and you know that's how many they sold. And I think there are 400 million Office users worldwide. I think that's probably the ones they sold. I think there's 1.1 billion internet users or so. So, you know, I think the number is probably 2 to 3 times that in real numbers. So, but an optimistic viewpoint, you know, we have maybe a fifth of the market, like that, maybe. That's good news. But when it comes down to the document share, it's a very different story. It turns out ODF is very new in terms of document, you know? And .doc is very old, you know? It's been there for a long time, it's backwards compatible, and there's a huge number of documents. So my finger in the air estimate here is that, you know, this is about the ODF document base out there, and it's not very big, right? And that's bad if you can't interoperate properly, right? If your core is missing features that are present in other things, and of course it's true for XLS and ODS and so on. So it's quite a serious thing not being interoperable. And so some people say, why is it hard? Why is it hard to do interoperability? Surely it's easy, you know, it's just a trivial thing, right? I just want to see my chart. How difficult can that be? That's a good question. I think I've told this story many times before, but either way, when Novell was buying Symian, they sent us this nice PowerPoint presentation, just a few slides, very simple, just a quick 10,000-foot overview of Novell, you know, how it was, who the customers were, what sectors they were in, what, you know, kind of income they were getting, and so on. I had a few pie charts like this. Anyway, I got the bug reports. It doesn't open, it doesn't work in OpenOffice anyway. So it turns out it did open in OpenOffice, but it was very, very slow. Interesting. Why was it so slow? Well, anyway, so you dig into the thing inside this Excel file, and it turns out it's got the entire customer database for that year, dumped in the background. And then there's a pivot table running on it. There's some massively complicated query. And of course, at the end, there's only some really non-confidential data showing up in a pie chart, but we got a complete customer list out of it, which was quite extraordinary. And you know, I think people are well aware of, for example, the undo issues, you know, with Word and removing your undo history when you mail stuff, but maybe not some of the more advanced stupidities that you can get up to if you really want. But the problem is, you know, the end user just perceives that their chart is broken, you know, and it doesn't render right, but actually, there was quite a lot of work went into rendering that chart, more than you might possibly imagine. So interoperability can be hard. What is also hard is that often there are very different models for doing things. And so, you know, the core model of your word processor is really rather important. And if it's been written to be different to the core model of where all the world's data is, as we just saw on the previous pie chart, then you can have problems. For a start, you start with a disadvantage because you don't have the fonts that Microsoft have. And it turns out the layout of your document is integrally bound to the fonts. And if you use a different font, well, you know, all the rows stretch and the brief lows and, you know, all these bullets drop off the bottom because this line got, you know, just long enough to wrap to here. And that means we lost this one and this one. You know, you see how it goes. It's some pretty grotesque stuff. And there's basically nothing you can do about it except licensing proprietary fonts, unfortunately. But quite apart from that, once you've licensed your proprietary fonts, all sorts of core features like redlining, where the OpenOffice ODF model is different, substantially different to the Microsoft model in many ways. Tables, how they arrange bullets and numbering and indentation fields. And ultimately, many of these in the word processor don't actually matter, turns out. Most of the time, if it's a Word document, usually it's fine. Unfortunately, lawyers, they often say, oh, we changed page 7, 17, and 9, or something. And you're right, okay, fine, and then the other counsel goes away and checks those pages. That doesn't seem to be any change at all, funny. Actually, because it's on pages 16, 8, and, you know, whatever, because it's all reflowed, and then they get very upset with you because they didn't trust you anymore. But if you're not a lawyer, you know, you're used to changing the page format anyway, right? So as soon as you do that, everything breaks. Or you're used to using your Nokia N800 or whatever and seeing it has to be reflowed to fit the device, right? So many of these problems are not so bad in terms of layout. You know, they're nasty in terms of round tripping and ensuring that you, when you do a small change, you don't corrupt the layout for a Word user. But, you know, they're not massively problematic. That's my take anyway. My writer guy disagrees. But the real pain comes in spreadsheets, right? And much less work is actually going on here, but it's actually much more critical. If your formula computes to a different value when you load your spreadsheet, you throw the spreadsheet away, the whole spreadsheet program, you can't have a different number. It's just, it's really, really bad. And, you know, if your layout isn't right, you can say you can just tweak it, but the numbers are really, really hard. The problem is people write effectively large, complicated programs using Excel. And to validate them and verify them is very difficult, and they're often buggy. I think 1 in 20 cells in a spreadsheet contains an error when you start doing the analysis. And most banks use spreadsheets for doing their calculations. In fact, no trade in the City of London, apparently they did some research. At some stage it goes through Excel. It doesn't matter who you deal with. And that's pretty scary. You know? If 1 in 20 cells are wrong, the banks have had to adjust their capital adequacy ratios, you know, because they screwed up some cell in the spreadsheet. Anyway, so, you know, you bring OpenOffice into the equation and, you know, we don't have inline arrays, the computation semantics is slightly different, there are some different behaviors, perhaps missing type. And this is a problem. And, you know, lots of work is being done here to fix it. In fact, you know, we have people working on this right now and some of the semantic things. And punchline is that at some level, compatibility hacks are necessary. To add more interoperability, you don't want to break your previous users, right? So at some point, if we want to make our, for example, our sum function more compatible with Excel in a way that potentially might break old calc documents, we have to add a flag that says, do it like calc 202, or do it like calc 203, right? So you get this grotesque hack in the file format somewhere, which unfortunately you can't really get around. And so you see some examples of this. This is a very heated rhetoric surrounding OpenXML at the moment. But one of the particularly story arguments is that it's terrible to standardize a date system that, you know, is inaccurate, that misses dates, right? You know, this is absolutely horrendous. And maybe you've seen spreadsheets, you know, basically you type a number into a cell, and you apply a format to it, and it turns into a date. That's what's happening underneath, right? The problem is, it seems obvious, right? You just convert the numbers to other numbers. It's the same date, and it's all fine, right? Well, the problem is, it doesn't have to have a format on it, and it can be used in computations all over the place, you know, subtracted and added, and of course there are all sorts of strange arrangements such that you can't effectively migrate this reliably at all. So it was decided a long time ago that the best way to do it is just to have two ways of rendering a number as a date. One, the Lotus 123 way, and another, the correct way, basically, you know, that doesn't miss dates. One of the supreme ironies of life is that the people who are most objecting to support for these old date formats are in fact Lotus and IBM. It's just one of those wonderful things, you know, that you shouldn't standardize compatibility with our old sheets that can't be fixed. So anyway, unfortunately, compatibility hacks are sometimes necessary, much as we hate them. So, Open Document versus Open Office, Open XML. Yeah. Yeah, there's some serious mental dissonance here. It was encouraging to be at the first ECMA meeting and hear Jean Pauli, you know, sort of Microsoft XML architect thing, repeatedly referred to it as Open Office XML. You know? He's trying to say Office Open, but, you know, it's terrible. Anyway, so at some level, how many of you have ever looked at the binary file format of their documents? Good. So this is really important to you guys, I guess. So the rest of you, like the vast majority of mankind, have never bothered to look inside these. But basically, there's a different approach here. This is basically doing runs of text and then applying attributes to them, right? So this is one run, this is bold, and, you know, it's just saying, here's an attribute which is bold. And you notice there's a certain terseness in a W colon B, right? Whatever. Which kind of sucks. XHTML is kind of easy to understand, arguably, right? You just have the bold tag, and then this is bold, and the end bold tag, which is fine. An open document is essentially the same thing as this, but massively verbose, as you see, you know? I mean, so why write, you know, bold when you have, well, you know, so it's more generic, right? So this strong 20 emphasis, this is a style name, so it's all done with styles instead of explicit bold attributes. You notice this actually has an explicit bold attribute, rather than a style that has bold. And, yeah, then we have the text in between. So, you can have religious wars about this endlessly, and that's fine. But you can map this to that quite easily. It's just the layout and the rendering of it that's difficult. But ultimately, they're probably fairly semantic, you know, fairly similar in many ways. So, I can't get that much that upset about an XML syntax when, broadly, the majority of the population are never, ever going to read the syntax at all. And, tag names. Some people like to spend their life choosing tag names, you know? That's not me. Layout is not specified by either side. So, in the debate, there's all this heated rhetoric about archiving your documents forever for future generations and preserving all of their content and whatever and whatever. The problem is, since they don't specify any form of layout, this is only partially true. You can get the text out, right? But it's like getting sort of a web page that happened to render very nicely in a certain resolution screen, you know, one of those nasty resolution-specific hacks, and then, you know, not ever being able to repeat it again. So, you know, when you have page one and it says, you know, shoot the first guy you see or whatever, you know, shoot this guy, and it reflows the text, you know, so that now this image is here and this one's up here. It's pretty bad, right? You lost information and you shot the wrong guy, right? He was your contact and not the guy you were supposed to knock off, right? So, all of these people lie about this long-term archiving and this wonderful capability, and that's just how it goes, I guess. Of course, there is some truth in it. You can still get this is bold out, and you can still get some, you know. You can get a lot out. In terms of precise layout, it's just a misnomer. You need PDF or, you know, some equivalent PostScript or whatever you standardly like. Yeah, and the good thing about standards is there's lots of them. As always. And in fact, we try and interoperate even with the most ugly and awful binary file formats that Microsoft have that are extremely under-documented in places. And also any other random nasty format that we happen to think we can do, you know, so Lotus 123 files. We haven't managed to crack Lotus Amy Pro, unfortunately. And for all certain large companies' rhetoric about the evils of binary file formats, we haven't got any documentation for this file format, unfortunately, despite asking all the right people for some considerable time. So, yeah, we're well up for importing at least any ultra-broken file format to get the data out. And I would argue that Microsoft had very different design constraints. They went for, you know, 100% backwards compatibility. And, you know, if broadly didn't, it went for more cleanliness and more, you know, brevity. And so, you know, it's a cleaner format in many ways. But maybe that's not what you want. Maybe you want your data to still calculate the same. So one of the things that that's happened in recent times is Novell's committed to doing OpenXML support. And one of the things we have to ship is this thing called ODF Converter. And there's a SourceForge.net project here. And it's an interesting strategy. Clearly, it seems to me, as an ignorant layman, that someone came along and said, we have to have ODF support in Microsoft Office, right? This was the edit that went out. It's politically expedient, yet we must have it. And so they said, fine, well, what we'll do is we don't want to do that, but we'll employ someone else to do it. So that's these guys in the middle. It's already arm's length, right? We're going to do it with XSLT, right? And the nice thing about XSLT as a design choice, well, there are very many nice things about it, depending on your perspective. But you have to have XML, right? Because it's an XML transformation language, right? But the problem is, Microsoft doesn't export any XML that you can transform. So, well, this is fine. We have an OpenXML file format. So what we'll do is we mandate everyone has to install this guy, and then we'll have an XSLT transform that converts it to ODF, right? Perfect. Brilliant solution. That anyone that wants ODF support has to install OpenXML support, right? Kind of, huh? Well, the other bit is that, XSLT is actually using the mono implementation of XSLT because it's kind of zip packaging and there's some pretty evil things going on there. So, it's extremely slow. That's one of the major advantages of it. So I guess the hope is that the customer, you know, rolls this bit out, tries this, realizes it's absolutely dire, and then falls back to this guy. You know, we got signed kind of open XML, zip format, whatever. We're there, you know. So it's a strategic move by Microsoft. It's probably very clever, I guess. Although you can see through it kind of quickly. But we have to ship this, so we're shipping it, and it's better than nothing, right? I mean, some documents load quite reasonably. I'll show you some in a minute. And if the choice is you can't read your document, or you can have some of it, that's fine. Currently, this guy only does .docx files, and of course, only a subset of that. I would encourage you actually to use Sun solution, which is altogether better, and actually reuses the OpenOffice code very substantially. So there's a big beast here. This is the same RTF API here. And then, of course, it does its own native export. So once you've got it into here, everything is good. And it, you know, I think the fidelity and the performance are bound to be much better. Of course, XSLT is a very popular language here, I must point out. I know I'm not in finance myself, but there's a school of thought called trend analysis, you know? And it says that, you know, you can draw a line through here, or you can... And I would say that, you know, XSLT is a technology whose time has not yet come, you know? I think, you know, probably around the end here, there's going to be a massive elbow, you know, and it'll become incredibly popular because of all this obvious maintainability, you know, properties, and its readability, and its extreme speed, and all of these things. And COBOL too, you know, I'm rooting for COBOL, so there you are. Okay, so let me show you how bad it can be. So here is a little guy. I just click on him. And these things here, if you ever wonder why this screen is almost totally blank, but there's this progress bar, that's it happening. But it did at least load this, docx file, and we got some tables and some numbering and that sort of thing. That wasn't entirely slow. Let me find this. I think this one's a bit slower. Unfortunately, we can't tell the progress either, so we have to wrap around the progress bar, you know, quite a lot. It turns out it's pretty difficult with XSLT to get a good idea of the progress. Anyway, that's
Yes,
what?
Add some animation.
Add some animation. Yes, there is an animation here. Oh, in the middle. Yeah, we can have a movie or something. But anyway, there you are. And as you see, yes, you can watch all of Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, whatever, in the time it takes to load. So this is not the world's most massive document, as you see, but you noticed it took a good while. And some documents take between 2 and 10 hours to load and save, you'll be pleased to know. So, you know, you can save overnight, obviously, while you're not there, but, yeah, anyway. So, what are we going to do about this? That's the real question. So we are participating in the ODF Converter project, of course. We're porting into Mono. In fact, we're shipping it with Mono on both Windows and Linux. We've got a 64-bit port, so it runs there, and we're improving a lot of the packaging, bundling, whatever, and doing some QA on it. And it'll be shipping soon on every SUSE release that has OpenOffice 2.0 on it, pretty soon now. However, it's clearly not a solution that's good enough for our customers. And so we're going to do it right as well. And we're really resourcing up a team to do really good built-in OpenOffice support and with Sun. So the problem is, when I don't mention Sun in this sentence, the engineers get really upset at me. They're like, you don't give us credit for all the great work they do. And they do some really great work, I would say. You know, Sun are the backbone of the OpenOffice community. But the problem is, there's also a political minefield here. So if I go around mentioning Sun accidentally, you know, they may get their leg blown off as well as me, which, anyway. So this week I'm mentioning Sun the Core, right? And we're doing work, they're already working on this OpenXML import, and some of these guys are starting soon. I have one more rec, so if there's a talented person out there interested in OpenOffice, available to start work as soon as possible, come and see me in the end, and maybe you get a job, so there you are. And this is clearly the right way to do it. Code reuse, you know, if there is a silver bullet, as Brooks says, it's code reuse. And I'm completely sold on this view. So, you know, we reuse the same internal filter logic. At some level, OpenXML is just a dump of the Microsoft binary records to XML. You know, I didn't see there's any particular shame in that. They have restructured it in different ways. So we can reuse a lot of the logic from the filters that already exist to try and overcome some of these nasty model mapping problems. And we can perhaps even clean up some of the code at the same time, because RTF is really just .doc as well in a different guise. So there's really these three formats now that are virtually the same semantic stuff. So yeah, if that interests you, then there are some really interesting problems there. You know, come and see me at the end. Lavelle's position on ODF OpenXML. Now, Friedman has wandered in the back since he wrote this. You know, he could come and tell you about it. But basically, you know, we think OpenXML is a fine standard. It's good. It's much, much better than what went before. But in reality, we think there should be only one standard, and that standard should be ODF, right? It's there, it's first, it's smaller, it's cleaner, it's better, and here we have a nice implementation that interoperates, you know, really wonderfully with any other OpenOffice. And you know, so there's some principles, you know, XML is clearly better than a binary file, obviously. Open standards are better than non-standards. And we've worked to try and encourage Microsoft to release more information and more information on this. So, you know, it's pretty easy to write one sentence for each XML tag, you know? Int whatever color index. This is an index of a color or something. You know, would be kind of common. We say, well, you know, what's the palette? You know, why are all these negative numbers there? What do they mean? You know, can you explain the, you know, some of the boundary conditions here? We need some more information. And unfortunately, this has the effect of bloating the specification. I think we started with 2,000 pages and we're now 6. And you know, this is unfortunate. But at least there's more more detail there that will help people in the future. Stay interoperable. So yeah, we're implementing support for OpenXML. It's not there yet. And yeah, we support ODF. It's our default file format. It's what we recommend to our customers. And we believe it's sufficient. We don't think there's any need to have an ISO standard of OpenXML. ECMA standard is fine. You know, it's all out there. It's all standardized. Why push it through ISO? So the rest of my talk is actually just probably cut and paste from some previous talk I did, but relates to interoperability slightly. So one of the really good news events that happened recently that hasn't shown out much, I guess, is that after many years of working on VBA stuff, primarily because there was a proprietary solution for macro migration out there, Sun have open sourced their proprietary solution, and we're going to be working together actually improving VBA interoperability. Now, you're hackers, right? I can tell you an evil story about VBA. So the code is very simple, basically. I mean, you get this idea, you know, not much flow control or anything. And there's some absolutely evil things in it. So for example, if you do a replace, you can do like range, replace, something, you can pass some parameters to it. And VBA comes really from a very sort of user experience sort of thing. So if you call replace and you set the default case sensitivity flag, Right, so you notice some of these things, you don't have to pass all the parameters, right? You can just pass a few. So if you set the case sensitivity flag in the first replace call, all subsequent replace calls will use the same setting unless you provide it, right? So this is really beautiful to have a global variable for the value of one of the arguments to a method. And so, you know, as you refactor your code, it can completely break because you can't read every line to see if it. And this is this nice succinct drill thing in the Microsoft documentation that explains unless you pass all the parameters, the behavior is a bit difficult to predict, you know? Particularly since it may well be an application global rather than just one sheet. Anyway, yeah. So you see, it's not a very beautiful thing. However, we have to, you know, get people's macros to run. So, you know, this compromise around the place. Uh-huh. And we don't run all macros at all, but send us your macros. We're always interested in analyzing them, getting more data, and, you know, I think we're making some really great progress there. And we have tools that will, you know, if you have a confidential spreadsheet of all your girlfriends, you know, various metrics and so on and so on, we can strip out the VBA, right, so you don't have to send all the data in, you know, and it'll be nice and confidential, and we'll still get a good idea. But the interesting thing, the more interesting thing about VBA is, you know, I didn't spend my whole life looking at the competition, but this is some interesting stuff, as I understand it, from Microsoft. They're dropping support for VBA on the Mac. I don't know, we have Eric Bachard here? Is he, No. Well, anyway, he works on the MacBook. And it turns out that Microsoft are not supporting their own scripting language and their own Office suite on OS X. And one of the reasons for this is that they've ported this guy to PowerPC at one stage. So, anyway, this is my understanding of it. VB sort of, you know, goes on this you know, long development story down here, and at some point VBA comes off it here, VBA. And this, you know, carries on in Microsoft Office as a kind of unsupported, ugly cousin of VB, which goes on to, you know, great new heights and ends up with VB.net, you know, the pinnacle of VB experience down here, right? So meanwhile, VBA is effectively dead, but who cares? And at some point, the Mac people come along and go, huh, well, what we need to do is we need to cut and paste it again, and then we need to, you know, adapt it all for Macs, and so there's all this gnarly RPC assembler and so on. So now we have three copies of VBA. You heard me mention that sharing code was really the only way earlier, right? Anyway, so they do all this work to make it run on the Mac, and then unfortunately Apple switches from PowerPC to x86, at which point they're totally stuffed. There's all this random JIT code that's been tweaked in weird ways to work, and I think one of the supreme ironies, or apart from these great apoplectic rage quotes and all that sort of thing, you know, that's pretty neat. But do go and read the whole thing, you know, just in case I'm quoting out of context. But GCC compatibility turns out to be a big issue for Microsoft on the Apple platform, because they use our free software compiler. And so one of the reasons why they can't ship VBA support is that they have all these weird extensions in their language that don't understand it. So that's a pretty nice place to be in terms of free software, and hopefully we'll see much more of this in the future. You know, but so at some level, we don't run all macros, right? But you can run your VBA macros on Apple using, effectively, Novell's code, and Microsoft won't be able to run them. So that's quite a nice place to be. So I'd like to persuade you that at the end of the day, it's going looking up the link, that's nice. I don't know if I'm online. OpenXML is not a uniformly bad thing, but there's no real need for a second ISO standard. Open documents, there are plenty of bodies buried in any piece of code, right? It's not a uniformly good thing either, particularly because it distracts people from the advocacy that matters, right? Free software is where the action is, you know? Don't talk about open standards, talk about the freedoms that you have and the freedoms that come from free software, you know? Well, if you have to say it's cheap, explain why it's cheap, you know, because you have all of these freedoms, you know? Don't ramble on about ISO standards and that sort of stuff. It just doesn't work. And we're hiring. Yeah, just want to stress that again, in case you've forgotten. And if you want to hack on it, just take a look at the wiki. So I guess that's the end of my talk, if I didn't overrun. Are there any questions? Are there any eggs to be thrown at me? I can stand away from the wall if you want, you know, so it's nice and clean. Questions? Come on. I think they spontaneously fossilized. Oh, this one down here. Yes.
Can I ask about the format, but about Mac in general?
Uh-huh,
shoot. What are your views about the new interface that Microsoft is introducing in the Office?
Yeah, I have some very unformed views about that. But I'll regurgitate them and you can maybe generate something useful about it. So there's some really interesting things about user interface, and I'm no expert, but But it turns out that you can make really, really compelling interfaces that are really easy to learn, and people rave about them in user experience reviews. Absolutely rave about them. They think they're wonderful. So for example, Clippy. Are you aware of Clippy? Clippy got UI reviews off the scale. Absolutely amazing. This is wonderful. I need it. You know, this. Why is it not in my software? It was an incredible hit in UI testing. But in deployment, it turns out this is one of the most irritating things that ever happened. Or maybe that's just minor tweaks needed and whatever, right? So, if possible, and maybe not likely, but it's possible that the new ribbon will bond with people who are used to something else. That's the first thing to say. Secondly, the ribbon is, I think, not very novel in the genuine novel sense of it. I mean, it's, you know, so there are some novel things about it, but it's broadly a notebook. Notebook set of tabs, right? Okay, they're not rendered as tabs, but as you click on them, basically it switches to a different page of a notebook. And, you know, inside there's some sort of live preview things, which are arranged quite nicely, but again, not, I would argue, not particularly novel. But the combined effect is, you know, is quite pleasing and easy to use if you're not an expert user and you're not used to, you know, the muscle memory for where things are. So, yeah, it looks quite nice, but I think, you know, there's certainly a lot of retraining necessary to move to. Any other unformed views that someone should...
You were talking earlier about OpenOffice being the only essential implementation of ODF.
Yeah, right. You saw my graph, did you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good. Let me just show it again, because I like that graph. Where is it? Yeah.
What are your views on the other projects that are...
They're perfect. They're just what we need. Other projects are good. In terms of research and doing funky new things, I think that's good. Well, the thing that irritates me is when it's necessary to sacrifice interoperability to add a feature in this guy that, you know, may not be used that much. So, in terms of standards, sometimes there are challenges with reconciling, you know, the need for funky, entirely new ways of doing numbering, for example, which are probably very good and worthy things to do, but, you know, one-way interoperable, you know? So no, I have no quarrel with the K-Office people. I just think that you know, people should be working on where they get the best bang for the buck, you know, on where freedom is best served and where people find out about free software and think, this is cool, you know? I want to work on this, I want to make it beautiful, I want to improve it, something they can love.
And the sort of proprietary, there are a few proprietary products
that... There are, okay, yes, perfect, good question. So there's the Lotus Workplace, you know? You're thinking of that guy. Well, that they forked OpenOffice at 1.1. something or other. And they did a whole chunk of work to it to try and keep it interoperable with the more recent OpenXML stuff. And they didn't release their changes back. And at the end of the day, it's still this guy here doing the rendering. So you can wrap it in Java and call it what you like, but it's still OpenOffice, right? And that's fine. Because I think really what people want is not 100 different code bases, all of which have slightly different behaviors and weird bugs, but different vendors they can rely on for what's valuable to them, the support, the deployment, and, you know, and actually meeting their needs. I mean, ultimately, if it turned out that Microsoft had bought all of their rendering core from Sun years ago and it's OpenOffice, would you care? Would you think it was a worse, you know, it would be no different. There would still be a big company supporting it and, you know, giving you, hopefully, what you need at a very reasonable price. Yeah. So that was a great question. There's a gentleman here.
You seem fairly supportive of Office Open, OpenXML, the Microsoft XML format. I know in the spec, sort of for the spreadsheet formulas at some points, it says, this shall behave the way Microsoft 3.1 behaves, or, you know.
Yeah, sure, like I said, in terms of backwards compatibility, yeah, that's necessary. I think the thing is, you can't really complain that simultaneously, that the spec is 6,000 pages, and then want tons of detail on how that behaved in that version. You see, I mean, these two opinions are kind of contradictory, and yeah, at some level, I'd like to know how it behaved in that version.
Is your feeling that the implementers can get that information if they want it, or is
I think my it? Feeling is that it's probably not as relevant as all that. But if you set out with a goal of 100% backwards compatibility, that's what you end up with, just inevitably. And clearly, ODF hasn't set out with that goal. And as such, it has less of that. And, you know, clearly what people actually want is probably somewhere between the two, right? They probably don't care about XL3 or whatever, right? Or I'd be amazed if anyone was still using it. you can't install it on the hardware. I would have thought the Windows version it needs to run. But you know, it's possible there are a few minority documents out there that make sense. But if you set off with that goal, then that's what you end up with.
So is your phone open spreadsheets, if that ever comes up as an issue, will you be able to get that information from Microsoft, or?
So, I think probably not, but if it does come up as an issue and we can find a copy of Excel 3 to install, then we can probably work out how it's behaving differently, particularly because it's likely that Microsoft have a tweak in the modern Excels to actually use that flag and behave in a different way, right? So probably you can just see how it's different. Change the flag, which now you can actually read to the file and see, wait a minute, this weird flag is set. Change it, see what changes, and you know, find out what's going on. So, I mean, yeah, any interoperability problem is very difficult, and tends not to be written perfectly day one, you know? You tend to iterate it in response to customer bugs. And, you know, what you see today in the binary document filters are just that, basically. A whole load of bug fixing over, you know, 10 years or something has made the filter actually really very good, I think. You know, the binary filters are really not at all bad, despite the total lack of anyone trying to help us make them good, you know? So, yeah. Did that answer the question or not?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of rhetoric out there that says I'm evil, you know, and particularly Miguel. Miguel is evil. We all know that. Miguel at Microsoft.com. That's the thing. But actually, my feeling is I'm not evil. And I'd like to encourage you that really, you know, again, the value is the free software and not the file format. We deal with all sorts of evil file formats and file formats change and you know, so on. But as long as we retain the capability to load it, and render it, and do, you know, recalculate it, that's what I care about. And making sure that's free software. Yeah?
Right now you mentioned that Novel is okay with OpenXML as a standard, but it's better to use ODF. As far as I observe, there is like a huge boom on the internet. I know about business OpenXML. Everyone wants to have open formats to move from one side to another, and suddenly Novel thinks that, oops, it's not that of a good idea, but we're kind of stuck in our own hole. We dug it, and we're there. Something doesn't... Are you gonna still lobby for the OpenXML format? It's like, I don't know. I don't know, just support it, to want it to exist. Are you gonna go to the standard organization and say, okay, drop it?
No, we're not gonna say drop it, but we're not gonna support it. That's our position. We're gonna abstain. Luckily, actually, Novell has no vote in ECMA, so we didn't even vote for it. We just turned up, gave them loads of grief over a really long period, got more information out of them that will make everyone's life better in the 10-year horizon. And then we didn't get to vote on it anyway, because we paid the cheapskate membership rate, you know? We haven't actually voted for it, ever, so, you know. Now what we do is we provide a second implementation, and we say we're going to support it in OpenXML, in OpenOffice. But that's not that controversial, and Sun is doing the same, so, you know. I didn't get the whole pit we're sitting in business, but, you know.
It's kind of confusing with this OpenXML rising and then everyone giving up on it. It's weird.
Everyone giving up on
OpenXML. Novel doesn't want it. Sun.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is that it's not that we don't want it, it's that on a business basis we think there should only be one ISO standard. And this is a business decision, and I can't go into the whole details of why ISO standards are better than other ones and government procurement and the balance of the market and, you know, all this sort of thing. That's not my decision. My decision is a technical decision, but I think it's a good thing that it happened and we made it a better standard. That's my call. I completely understand this call as well, but, you know, we don't think it should become a nicer standard. That's fine, but it's not my decision. It's a business decision. And, you know, and it's a very politicized decision as well. And a lot of the people fighting the politics are not actually writing the code either. Because when it comes down to it, it's a lot better to have an open, you know, an XML-based file format than this awful mess that was there before. So I can't really comment on the business angle of it, but I can present what our opinion is, and that's it. Are there any other questions of an easier nature without deep holes in them? Zahida, you must have a question. Come on, you're a questioning sort of person. No? So Hewlett also has 5 recs to work on OpenOffice, as I recall. Is that still correct? If you want to move to Hamburg and program on, you know, 6 million lines of code, you know, that's sort of 1.2 million each, then, you know, this is a good thing. Google can help you fulfill that dream. But come and talk to me first. So, well, thank you very much. You've been very patient, very kind, very good of you.